Welcome to The Thing About Austen, a podcast about Jane Austen's world. I'm Zan.
And I'm Diane. And this episode, we're talking about Emma's Portrait of Harriet. Today, we are so excited to welcome back a returning guest, Georgie Castilla. Georgie is a New York area-based lyricist, production designer, and costume designer for film and theater, and a freelance comic artist and illustrator. He is the founder of Dunieth Comics and creator of Regency-era-inspired webcomics Garden of the Year, What Would Jane Do?, and Spinsterly Ever After, as well as the LGBTQ+ slice of life strip Your Sense and My Sensibility. Georgie is also currently working on a graphic novel adaptation of Emma, which makes him an ideal guest to discuss today's scene, where art is center stage. So welcome, Georgie!
Yay, thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, always a good time when we get to talk with you.
So for today's episode, we're actually headed to the scene adjacent to the scene we discussed in Georgie's first episode. So I think we can all consider this a sort of part two of sorts. In this scene, Emma has decided to paint Harriet's portrait. And so, of course, Mr. Elton must be on hand to supervise. It's extremely important.
Okay, so here is kind of our jumping off point from the text. She had soon fixed on the size and sort of portrait. It was to be a whole length in watercolors, like Mr. John Knightley's, and was destined, if she could please herself, to hold a very honorable station over the mantelpiece. The sitting began, and Harriet, smiling and blushing, and afraid of not keeping her attitude and countenance, presented a very sweet mixture of youthful expression to the steady eyes of the artist. But there was no doing anything, with Mr. Elton fidgeting behind her and watching every touch. She gave him credit for stationing himself where he might gaze and gaze again without offense, but was really obliged to put an end to it and request him to place himself elsewhere. That last part is so good. Like, move, please. You are obnoxious.
I don't understand. Why does this man just keep, like, mouth-breathing over my shoulder? What is happening?
So, obviously, there's so much to talk about here. So, to start us off, let's just talk about the medium that Emma has chosen for the portrait. And so, we do find that this is going to be a watercolor. And so, Georgie, why do you think that Emma decides watercolor is the right choice for Harriet?
Well, watercolor or aquarelle painting became very popular in England during the 18th century. Among the elite and aristocratic classes, watercolor painting was one of the incidental adornments of a good education. People like mapmakers, military officers, engineers leaned on watercolors to depict things like properties and buildings and terrains, fortifications, field geology. And the practicality of watercolors was due to the fact that the paint consisted on solidified pigments that were very easy to travel with and were activated by a simple ingredient, which was water. You didn't need any other solvents to clean your brush with. Water made the paint happen. And water made the tools clean. Easy. Before the turn of the 18th century, watercolor painters needed to make their own paints at home using pigments purchased from an apothecary or a specialized color man. So it wasn't the easiest medium to come by. However, as watercolor popularity grew during the second half of the 1700s, the improvement of watercolor paper and paints made this art form much more accessible. Several watercolor societies appeared in England at the beginning of the 19th century. The Society of Artists, for example, founded in 1761, held several watercolor exhibitions, and the style began to shift from merely useful to a form of artistic expression.
Mm, okay.
With depictions of landscape and flora, fauna, and eventually portraiture becoming a popular practice among the educated classes. So it makes sense for Emma to choose a style as delicate and beautiful as aquarelle to depict Harriet, because it was a style that was on trend. And being handsome, clever, and most importantly, rich, she had access to education and was able to afford the materials. And let's also consider that Emma is trying to better, quotation mark, better Harriet by exposing her to a social sphere quite different to the one she's been brought up in. It's like Emma is telling Harriet, we good society girls work with watercolor.
Okay.
Because it was a fact. And we mentioned in our previous episode together that ladies would not work with oil on canvas, for example. That was messy work, that was considered work for the masters, not for the genteel ladies at home. So it totally makes sense for Emma to say, let's work with watercolors.
Well, I love that it's also such a delicate and decorative, and that makes sense in this context of painting Harriet. That makes a lot of sense.
Exactly.
So let's also talk about the full length setting for this portrait. You know, there's a great deal of talk in the scene about Harriet's pose, her height, and the way people are watching and commenting on the scene. It feels very staged and theatrical. So why do you think Austin sets the scene so meticulously?
That's a good question. Well, I think it's because having your likeness taken back then was quite the event. Not everyone had the opportunity to be captured in art. And it surpassed the mere fact of working on a painting. It became also a social activity. One can totally picture Emma and Harriet playing around with different poses, different angles. Maybe they are discussing what kind of background they're going to add to the painting. And during all of this, Mr. Elton is watching. Emma wants Mr. Elton to watch Harriet in all her glory because she wants Mr. Elton to take note. And I think Austin is having a lot of fun here. And when the picture is done and everyone is commenting on it, you get to see everyone's personality very clearly. Mr. Elton, ever the flatterer, won't stop praising it, going over the top with compliments and offering to undertake getting the picture framed, going all the way to London. And Mr. Knightley, on the other hand, has to hammer it with his honest opinion about, you know, Emma making her too tall. And Mr. Woodhouse is, being the ever so loving father, suggesting that it should be framed. But of course, he must mention that Harriet is sitting outdoors with nothing but a shawl around her shoulders. So I think it is very theatrical. And Austin takes the opportunity to show us who these people are in a very subtle and fun way.
Right. What I love most about this scene is it is also sort of that hint of like mystery of where you as a reader, especially the first time you're reading this book, you're like, okay, Elton is not into Harriet, right? Like, right? You know, you're kind of like, wait, is he
exactly?
Harriet? And you're kind of like, no, he's definitely into Emma, right? And and of course, Emma can't see it at all, even though everything that he's saying, even when it's like a compliment for Harriet, it's clearly really a compliment for Emma.
Exactly.
Well, it's kind of impossible to talk about the scene, as we've already sort of noted, to talk about the scene without talking about the Elton in the room. So, Georgie, let's talk about how this scene develops Elton's character in particular. What are the dynamics that we're getting? Why are we getting so much Elton in this scene?
An almost painful amount, let's be
agreed.
Real, you know?
Mr. Elton is fishing right from the beginning of the novel. We just don't know it. We know through conversations that Mr. Elton hasn't been in Highbury that long. In the very first chapter of the book, Emma mentions that he has been in town for only a year. A whole year and he's still unmarried, ladies. We must do something about that. No, but the man is searching. Emma might think that she's the one to put the idea of marriage in his head, but we know perfectly well that that is not the case. And the guy is one step ahead of Emma. Jane Austen does a terrific job playing with the reader's mind during the portrait chapter. Mr. Elton is ever so charming, solicitous, eager to praise and flatter. And it's not very clear at first if his interest is in Emma or if there is indeed hope for him and Harriet. Later on, when Mr. Knightley discovers that Emma persuaded Harriet to refuse Robert Martin, he does mention that Mr. E will not marry cheaply. And one begins to put the puzzle pieces together, and it clicks that during the portrait scene, Elton was not complimenting Harriet at all, but Emma's artistry on the subject. Or in the passage previous to the portrait, in which Mr. Elton tells Emma that she has improved Harriet greatly, and he's not truly praising Harriet. He's hinting that dear Miss Woodhouse is ever so perfect because she is perfecting everyone and everything around her. But Jane Austen gives us this information little by little, very, very cleverly done. And Mr. Elton does not have a hair of foolishness in him. He might appear that he's very, you know, flamboyant, over the top, and very rehearsed, but he's calculated things. Like, he knows what he's after. And that is why when Mr. Knightley says, you know, let me hint to you, my darling, that if the man you have in mind is Mr. Elton, Mr. Elton will not do. I've heard him talk when ladies are not at present what his intentions are, and he totally wants to marry money.
Yes.
Well, it's like the sort of thing where Emma could be painting a bowl of turnips and Elton would be like, oh, it's ravishing. It's stunning.
You've captured this root vegetable.
Because it's not about the art. It's about being on Emma's good side, period.
Well, one of the things I was noticing when you were talking, Georgie, you talked about how he's rehearsed, right? He's really, really polished all of his ways that he intends to compliment Emma, all of the ways that he plans to be present in this painting. And it really goes back to that idea of theatricality, right? The idea that he is performing for Emma. She's obviously like oblivious that this is a performance for her. But I think it's fascinating the way that this scene setting and everything is really, Emma is trying to set a specific staged theme for Elton to peruse and enjoy Harriet, but he sees it as a scene setting for him to perform lover like whatever for Emma. And I think that it's really fascinating the way this comes off as staged performance, especially on Elton's side. He is particularly inauthentic and performing here.
Well, it's kind of like that line in Pride and Prejudice with when Mr. Collins mentions like, oh, you know, sometimes it's nice to just practice some nice little compliments for the ladies. And you can absolutely imagine Elton in front of the mirror. He's like, okay, I'm going over the Hartfield. All right, here are my lines.
Exactly. And even the language that Jane Austen uses to write how Mr. Elton expresses himself is very rehearsed. It's very, it's like no one talks like that. You know, it's very elaborate and very over the top and overworked. And I think that's part of the deliciousness of the character, how ridiculous he is.
Well, especially because we do have that really stark contrast of Knightley and Mr. Woodhouse, who are just being genuine, totally authentic to who they are. And so their comments aren't performed. They aren't glib. They're just like, I think you took some liberties there, Emma. And then, you know, again, Mr. Woodhouse being like, she looks cold. You know, those are just very, very authentic responses, which just highlight how performative Elton is, I think.
I love Papa Woodhouse. He is forever my favorite.
He's precious.
He just wants everyone to stay warm and have a bowl of gruel.
And see Perry on a regular basis.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, I think because of the scene, right, it's kind of iconic and it's telling us so much about so many characters. So because of that, it is a scene that, or a variation of it, right, that appears in pretty much every adaptation of Emma. So, Georgie, why do you think that this is adaptation catnip?
Well, I think it has to do with how dynamic the whole chapter is. It gets to drop a few hints about the mystery of who loves who. We get to see Emma in action, trying her best at matchmaking and failing miserably. And we get to see Mr. Elton's character, or the character he's selling us, because my, how much his colors changed after marrying Augusta. We also see Harry's sweet disposition when manipulated by Emma, which contributes greatly to her character arch later on. I think also that the fact the scene plays surrounding a painting makes for an opportunity to be visual, which is something that you want in a film adaptation, for example.
Right.
It's something that's so true to the period as well. You know, we don't take pictures with a camera. You know, people would actually sit down and pose for a painting. And that's something that's so beautifully dedicated to this specific period that when you are adapting to film, you want to recreate the period as beautifully as possible. So it's something that's visually very attractive to put on screen.
Well, I think it also does a really good job. The way that you framed it for me, Georgie, it helps me also realize that by having Harriet, there's a little bit of like there's some meta stuff going on, right, with a visual representation, mm-hmm. right? Because we've got Harriet posing for Emma, for us as consumers of the visual. And I think it adds, in adaptations particularly, it adds a layer of nuance to the way that we understand Harriet as well, because she's become kind of an object this way. She's become an object for both of them to kind of use for their own purposes. And by doing a visual representation of this in an adaptation, it's just that additional step away from it that allows that to be like very clear for audiences, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And there's also the layer of, it's a scene that gives us the opportunity to be as comedic as possible. There's a lot of comedy in yeah. it, which also adds to the fact that let's just have a slice of fun, a comic relief with this, with Mr. Elton being so over the top, over Emma's shoulder. You know, we've seen adaptations in which Harriet is trying to adopt the most ridiculous postures and poses, and it's just funny. Mm-hmm. It's a scene that you can take to the extreme, and it will deliver what it needs to deliver.
Right.
It's just so funny. It's visually attractive. It's an opportunity for you, for your production, to show off the costume design as well. Like, there's so many elements that contribute to this particular moment in the story that it's just impossible to skip it.
Well, I think, like you were saying, the comedic aspect, Georgie, it's that great opportunity, like you were saying, for the visual joke. It's an opportunity to do that kind of where Elton is going on and on about how amazing it is, and then the camera pans and basically she's drawn like a squiggle, you know? And so as the audience, you're kind of like, okay, wow, this guy's being awfully complimentary and there's like nothing even on the page yet. There's a lot that you can do with it. And I think kind of because the scene is doing so much with, you know, showing us all these little bits of characters, like, okay, we really know who Knightley is. We really know who Elton is.
Yeah.
It's like Austin at her finest in terms of show, don't tell.
Oh, yeah. And I love this scene in every single adaptation. And in fact, I dare say I always look forward to see the scene adapted because it's a given. It has to be there. Even Clueless has it. Of course, Cher uses a camera instead of watercolor paper, but the scene plays pretty similarly to Austin's. It's catnip. Adaptation catnip. It has to be there. You expect it.
If you had to pick a favorite, do you have a favorite amongst all the film adaptations?
Wow. That's a very hard question. However, there is a detail I absolutely adore during this scene in Autumn de Wilde's version, which is a 2020 film adaptation. And it's due to the outstanding job that Alexandra Byrne did with the costume design in what I insist is the most beautiful interpretation of Regency ever captured on film. Fight me if you dare. So here's the thing. Emma Emma is trying to match Harriet and Mr. Elton, right? So you would expect Emma to make an effort to ensure the spotlight is on Harriet. However, being so used to being the center of attention, Emma is dressed to kill in this scene. During the scene in which she's going over the portfolio of her unfinished art, she's wearing a striped dress that she wore in a previous scene. But this time she's accessorizing with a gold overbodice, which is shiny, it's silky, delicious. It's the color of money, the color of power, the color of influence. And then she adds that ruffled choker that's to die for. I can't get over how beautifully over the top that choker is. And there goes Emma trying to find a husband for her friend while stealing every second of the show. And then during the painting of the portrait, she does it again by wearing this delightful kanetsu with ruffles around the neck, which is impossible to ignore. I just love how Alexandra Byrne costuming enhances how clueless Emma is in all of this.
Yeah.
And of course, Mr. Elton wouldn't even consider looking at Harriet. How could he? When Emma looks like the perfect depiction of elegance and poise and privilege, Mr. Elton knows better than to fix on Harriet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I absolutely love how the scene plays in that adaptation. I think it's just beautifully done in that particular adaptation. It's like, oh, yes, you went all for it.
Well, I think that enhances that theatricality as well. The fact that, you know, you were talking about how this is catnip because it's the staging and it's the dialogue and everything. I think this also is a really lovely, the way that you've just described it specifically with the costuming and everything. It's that homage to like 18th century theater and like pieces like School for Scandal or things like that, where it's like very farcical.
Yes.
And the visuals play into it in a really, really heavy, heavy way. Now that you've kind of pointed out that those details about the costuming, it just like it takes that next level farcical kind of visual decadence.
Exactly. And Autumn de Wilde takes the comedy to the extreme, which I thought it was just delightful when we get the framed version of the picture and it's framed in this ridiculous music box style frame, you know, and then Emma throws these comments and saying something like, well, you certainly did not spare any expense. It's just so, it's hilarious. It's like, it's just hysterical. Of course, the theatricality of that surrounds someone posing for a picture. And let's also not forget that, you know, Harriet had never been exposed to anything like this before. So this, the fact that Emma wants to give this to her friend so she could have an opportunity to marry well. Because, yes, you know, Emma is very foolish in what she does, but deep down, she has good intentions. She wants for Harriet to marry well. She wants her to move up in life. And that, you know, she has the best intentions for her. There's no malice in it. And I see that the adaptations, all of them do a really good job portraying how much she tries to make this moment very special, both for Harriet and for Mr. Elton, because she's trying to do something here with the two of them. And the fact that Harriet is being exposed for the very first time to this kind of activity, a social activity she has never been exposed to, it's only normal that everything plays out so over the top because Emma wants to go all the way out to make sure that this is just unforgettable, which I think is really endearing and very cute in a way.
So obviously we have to ask you, Georgie, you know, because we've been talking about the scene that is so theatrical and that lends itself so well to adaptation. So, I mean, we're curious, like, how are you approaching this in your own adaptation?
Yeah. That's an ambitious question. I'm moving very slowly with the novel. No, that's not true. But, in my adaptation, I tried to be as close to the novel as possible without lingering too much for the sake of page and panel count. So I don't invest a lot of time depicting, for example, Mr. Elton being asked to read or to move. I think I focus more on Emma thinking that Mr. Elton is enraptured by Harriet. And what I find really fun is that because the storytelling in a graphic novel is done through images, we end up with a picture of someone painting a picture, which is art within art.
Yes.
Which I think is really cool. So the style I'm using for the overall novel is very sketchy in a cute way, because I wanted the whole work to look almost as if Emma is drawing her own story. And we know that she's got a portfolio full of unfinished sketchy art. And I wanted to take that as the inspiration for the art style that I'm using for the graphic novel. So for Harriet's painting, I go a degree or two even sketchier, which makes the portrait look very funny, if you ask me, in my honest opinion. I think it just looks very ridiculous, on purpose, of course. Because I could totally picture my cartoonish version of Mr. Woodhouse making a face saying, "Oh, yes, darling, it's very pretty. We need to frame it."
Oh, I love that.
I mean, the good thing about graphic novels and comics is that because everything is so cartoony, you can really take advantage of the comedy that Jane Austen wrote so beautifully and so perfectly, because it's there. I don't even have to try to be funny, because it's there. It's there. Line after line, she delivers. She knows how to make us laugh. She's very witty and she's very intentional. Nothing is foolish or silly, gratuitously speaking. Nothing is gratuitous. Everything has a purpose. And that's something that I was very clear when I was adapting the scene. It's like, I was like, yes, this is a very funny scene. It has to be funny because it does serve a purpose. And that's something that I tried not to forget when I was writing my own version in my own script. And of course, translating it from the script to the actual panels, it's a challenge in itself. But I think I managed to capture the beauty and the comedic aspect of the scene.
Just the idea of what you've visually described, it's got the fingerprints of just comedy, the joke that is just visually represented. I mean, I can't wait. I am so looking forward to seeing this panel come to life in your adaptation.
I'm just clapping my hands together in excitement. Yay!
And of course, it's a Dunieth comic adaptation, so you can expect a lot of pastels and pink and over-the-top cuteness, because that's just who I am.
We love it.
Love it.
Well, Georgie, thank you so much for coming back on and talking to us about Harriet's Portrait. Where can people find you online, follow along with this great adaptation that you're working on, all of that?
Yeah, so thank you so much for asking, because I recently started a video series depicting the process. It's called The Making of Emma. It's a vlog that is on dunieathcomics.com or in Dunieth Comics YouTube channel. And what I'm trying to do is, I think watching something happen is very special. And because this is my very first approach to adapting Austen to graphic novel, which has been by far the most ambitious artistic project that I've ever done so far in my life, I wanted to share with those who care the process, all that goes into adapting such a complex novel into a media that is so visual and so demanding and so strict with certain rules. So the intention of the video series is to share a little bit about the process, what goes into making a graphic novel, from adapting the novel into a script and then going into the thumbnails and defining the right art style. So I have a few episodes. There's a new episode coming at the end of this month about character design. So yeah, if you're interested, please follow dunieathcomics.com, Dunieth Comics on Instagram, Dunieth Comics on YouTube. And I think that when people feel part of something, it makes it even more special, because I'm not making this adaptation for me. I'm doing it for the community.
Right.
This is my own take on Jane Austen's Emma. And by the time we are ready to publish it and say, hey, this work needs your support, people already know what I'm talking about, because people have been following the process and feeling like they are also a part of it. And I'm all about feedback too. I like hearing people say, yeah, this is beautiful. Questioning, why did you decide to do this? You know, I take all of these things in consideration for my work, because at the end of the day, we mentioned something like this in our previous episode together. Once the work is done, it no longer belongs to you. It belongs to the world, and the world is welcome to have an opinion, and the world is welcome to enjoy it or trash it,
however they feel.
No, but hopefully people will love it. I am having a great time putting it together. It's very challenging, but you know, one step at a time.
I know that I have loved getting to see a little bit of the behind the scenes on your process. It's been absolutely delightful. Yes. To follow along.
100%.
Well, thank you.
Well, Georgie, thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me back. It was delightful, as always.
Always a treat to get to talk to you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you again to Georgie Castilla for joining us for this episode. You can find us on Instagram at @thethingaboutaustin and on Twitter at @austin_things. You can also check out our website, thethingaboutaustin.com, and email us at thethingaboutaustin@gmail.com. And you can also check out our merch for the podcast on Redbubble. For that, you can go to aboutaustin.redbubble.com.
Stay tuned for next episode, where we'll be talking about the Bennett sisters' shoe roses.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.